Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Frank Gunning. All right, this is the year. Just like Sheldon Keefe had like multiple years, and then finally was the year where he could put his stamp on the Leafs because, you know, he had mid-season joining the team midstream, or he had to deal with Tyson Barrie and him not getting enough rope offensively.
He had to make sure he didn't look at anybody's phone. He's like, yeah. I don't even want to see him, guys.
Yeah, and then, you know, changing the culture by playing music during practice.
Yep.
Anyways.
And then for whatever reason, it took like four seasons until he had his first real training camp. It was like COVID and a million different things. And then he got the real one.
Mm-hmm. And Brad
Treliving. That changed everything?
Brad Treliving, you know, did arrive before a season, but in the middle of the offseason when Kyle Dubas lit himself on fire and Brendan Shanahan wouldn't have in that. And then immediately had to sign Auston Matthews to an extension and watch the deadline for Mitch Marner trades pass because his no move kicked in, and then figure out an extension for William Nylander, which was so difficult for him to figure out, by which I mean he just gave him everything he wanted. Anyways, it's all besides the point. He remade the blue line, okay?
He did.
He turned the Leafs into a division champion. Okay? Yes.
Yeah, that happened.
Had them winning a playoff series for just the second time in this vintage.
Yep.
Now he's headed into an offseason with some extreme uncertainty.
Yep.
One thing's pretty certain. The 100-point player that played on the top line with the best player who had a down year, he's leaving.
Yes.
Okay?
Mitch Marner's that guy's name.
Yeah. Matthew Nyes, he needs an extension. He's a restricted free agent, does not have a contract for 25-26. John Tavares is an unrestricted free agent. And he's not a 100-point player, but he's a 75-point player and didn't play 82 games last year. He's a free agent. Brent, how much faith do you have in Brad Treliving to totally remake this Leafs team with all the cap space in the world? It's all out there.
Yep.
But some obvious holes still remaining on this roster.
Man, if they are not able to get John Tavares on the Matt Duchene sweetheart deal or something along those lines, yeah, I'm incredibly, incredibly worried. I think there are things, I think GMs are often a lot like the players they try to get on their teams. Some of them are perfect, okay? Like, they're the fewest of the few, but there are the Sidney Crosbys of general managers, okay? And they're great at signing contracts, and they're great at making trades, and they're great at drafting, and they're able to have a good development system. Some guys are, I don't know, let's pick a former Leaf. Some guys are Phil Kessel. They have one or two things they're really good at, and sometimes that thing is snapping it under the bar, and it's really, really valuable. I think Brad Treliving is closer to that style of GM. I don't think anybody would have said Phil Kessel was a bad hockey player, so I don't think that's that big of a knock. I think there are things that Brad Treliving's really good at. I think if you need somebody to come in here and reshape your blue line, great job. He is honestly as close to the man for the job for me, because you look what he did in Calgary and you look what he did so quickly here in Toronto, where it was a problem forever. But long-term vision didn't exactly work out the way he wanted in Calgary. The developing of forward depth didn't exactly work out the way he wanted it to in Calgary. And those are the two decisions, or those are the two things that you need to focus on if you're the Leafs GM this offseason, is what is the plan? Like, what is the five-year plan here for this org? And who is going to play center if it's not John Tavares? Because you don't need one, you then probably need two. So I have massive questions about it. Yeah, my level of certainty is nowhere close to certain, is where my level of certainty is on that.
Yeah, it seems like the most obvious way forward for the Maple Leafs with all this cap space is through free agency, or maybe absorbing somebody else's bad contract. Like, maybe they can be the team that hopes for a bounce back season from somebody who feels overpaid.
Okay, but like, can I expand on that? I've seen this like Mika Zibanejad stuff out there. It's like, I'm sorry, you don't want to sign John Tavares for $6 million, so you're going to give Mika Zibanejad $8 million, or you're going to add more to the deal to get retention, to get it to a number that you want? I'm not saying that those have to be the only two options, but it feels like that is the thing that I keep seeing out there of like, hey, reclamation project, what about Kadri? Okay, what does it cost? It might cost one thing to get Nazem Kadri. It costs very, very different price if you're saying, what does it take to get like a couple million of retention on that to get Kadri or Zibanejad or any of these guys at a price we want?
Well, it doesn't feel like Zibanejad's on the market anymore anyways.
Yeah, I know.
So it seems like the most likely way for Brad Treliving to remake this roster is, once again, through free agency. What have we learned pretty definitively about Brad Treliving And it's different when you're talking about other players and unrestricted free agents as opposed to your own players that you're trying to retain, yep. I suppose. But he also gave Chris Tanev all the years, right? It yep. was the cost of doing business, I suppose.
Totally was.
But hasn't exactly felt like a shrewd negotiator, as exemplified by also the John Tavares discourse that's happening behind the scenes, where it seemed like that was going to be the easiest of easy contracts to negotiate, that this thing, there's frustration on both sides, and we're perilously close to him becoming an unrestricted free agent on July 1st, seemingly for a guy that wants to be here, understands he's taking a haircut, but feels like, I think rightly, yeah. I mean, points to history that Brad Treliving is a guy that you can push to a higher number than he maybe initially wants you to have.
Yeah, there's an element of that. I'm not gonna fault Brad Treliving for the Tavares negotiation not going rosy. I will look, if John Tavares isn't a Leaf, we're gonna find out what happened there one way or another. And then I think there's a world where you absolutely can hold him accountable if you just sit there going 3.5, 3.5, 3.5, and Tavares like, come on, there's a little wiggle room. I think there's a world where, yes, Brad Treliving could play a part in screwing this up, but I think John Tavares isn't a Leaf right now because he hasn't capitulated, and quite frankly, I'm happy that Brad Treliving hasn't either. Like, that's not to say that there's not a number that, you know, Treliving shouldn't overpay by a bit, because I think it is so dire to get a center, and quite frankly, I would rather overpay a little bit on a John Tavares contract than, I don't know, like, you can't get Ryan Donato. The Blackhawks signed him. But do that for a completely unknown commodity. And it's like, again, like, I'm just going to pick on Ryan Donato here. It's one thing to have your 30 goals as a Blackhawk. It's a very different thing to play in a playoff series and do it in against the Florida Panthers and all of, and, you know, be checked the way a top six guy would be without the presence of Bedard. So I think there's a lot at play there that I honestly, if you're going to make a mistake in free agency, and generally speaking, you do, like, very rarely is it the TJ Brody where you're like, wow, what a perfect deal. And guess what? It wasn't perfect by the end of it for the Leafs side of things. I'd rather make the mistake and overpay JT a little than give, you know, way too much money or way too long a term to a guy that you genuinely don't know how they fit.
Yeah, building the blue line, that's one of Brad Treliving's strengths. It's done. If he doesn't want to touch the blue line, he can not add a defenseman this offseason, like he didn't add a forward last offseason.
Nope.
But it has yet to be proven whether Brad Treliving can add forwards to a group in the correct fashion. And who can backfill the loss of 100-point Selke-nominated forward?
Well, and the other thing is, just quite frankly, like, if that team is Vegas, okay, maybe that team is Vegas. But who has built their team through free agency in this league? Nobody. Nobody's done it. And I suppose you'd make the argument of, well, if they already have two goalies and a number one center and a number one winger, is that building the team through free agency? Yeah, I think it is. I think second and third lines are important, and you're still trying to build that up through free agency, because I think if you look at the wings for the Leafs, yeah, there's a lot to like. Like, you know, McMahon didn't have the playoffs you want, but I'm not throwing that player overboard. The Knies stuff, you know, I think that Max Domi, if he's not forced to play center, I think there's absolutely a world where you're getting commensurate value for him. Scott Laughton, you don't have to like the trade. You should like that player at $1.5 million in this cap environment. If Scott Laughton was a center, if Scott Laughton was a free agent, he'd be getting 4.5 or 4 because he plays up the middle. So I think that that's the problem with this, is that if you let John Tavares walk, you have to completely remake the spine of your team through free agency. And champions don't do that. They don't. They have the one piece or the two pieces that change things or add the little extra grit or whatever it is they need. They do not add to the core of their team usually through free agency.
Yeah. Not through paying 37-year-olds through their age 41 or 42 season, which might be happening with Brad Marchand upcoming.
With the old rat. Yeah.
All right. How do you like Evan Bouchard for $10 million? Because that appears to be where we're headed, even if it's a bridge deal, if it's arbitration.
What?
It seems that Evan Bouchard's deal is going to be at least double-digit millions of dollars. Of course, hanging in the balance is the Connor McDavid extension, and you wonder how much he's paying attention to what's happening with some pending restricted free agents and what's happening in goal here. Obviously, I think you would like to have Evan Bouchard back. I think.
Yes.
I'm pretty certain, despite the flaws with the player, the production, pretty unassailable.
Yes.
Continuing into the postseason. So the Leafs, there is a benefit to losing Mitch Marner, and John Tavares at least has $11 million cap hit.
Sure.
is that they're about to not be the poster boy shining example of the team with the top heavy contracts at the top of their cap sheet, because whatever happens here with the Oilers, they're going to have, well, one, Leon Draisaitl's $14 million cap hit kicks in. So yep. Also no longer is Auston Matthews the highest paid player in the NHL.
Yeah, our time, baby.
And yeah, they're going to still have the Darnell Nurse making more than $9
million. Yeah,
and
more than Morgan Riley. Yeah.
And they're going to have Evan Bouchard making north of $10 million. Brent, the Oilers now, this example, they're the team. You can't talk about the Leafs and that just... In this cap world, it's not going to work the way the Leafs have tried to put it together. Now, there's a difference in how those two teams have performed recently with those players that are earning
right.
that money. But Cup still remains 0-0.
Yep, good stat. I like it.
The Oilers are now that team, though.
They are. The other thing, though, the Oilers could point to that, you know, much to the chagrin of Mitch Marner, that the Leafs can't point to is that, you know, two of their 10-plus million-dollar guys have won Hart trophies, not just one. And I know, like, John Tavares maybe could have won one if he wouldn't have given back his assist that year when he should have won the Art Ross, but probably wasn't going to happen, okay? So that's the difference, I think, that the Oilers will be able to point to. Now, I also don't know that you can point to that difference when you get in trouble. The first thing you do is throw those guys in the same line. It kind of takes away the, like, depth that you're supposed to have with two centers being able to do that. They are about to become the new poster boy. This Bouchard thing is a disaster. It's actually one of the first times I see a team, to make everything about the Leafs, running into the problem the Leafs had. You know, to go back to the very first, you know, contracts coming out of the ELCs for all those guys, the Avalanche were in an excellent position because it took Nathan MacKinnon 3 seasons to figure it out as an NHL player, and he was able to take the bridge deal, and then he gets his big payday. It is so nice to see Evan Bouchard ascend this way to where, again, if you missed it on 32 Thoughts, Elliot Friedman saying just the way the numbers are positioned for this player, that even an arbitrator on a one-year deal is going to be offering something in the realm of that, and then you want to bridge him, why would he take less than that? They have removed the possibility, because always with teams you say, okay, you could bridge and you take a little haircut on the deal. You can't bridge and take a haircut on the deal, so you might as well do the massive, massive banger if you're the Oilers. Like, if you're already committing $10 million to the player, mm-hmm. why would you not, and you're going to only get 3 or 4 years out of that,
wow.
why would you not go all the way with where the cap is going?
Yeah, and if you're Evan Bouchard, why are you taking 10 times 8 if you're going to get 10 times 1 if you do nothing? Right. If you do nothing, you're getting $10 million in 25, 26.
Yeah.
You're giving the franchise all the wiggle room if you sign 10 times 8.
Totally.
Why would you?
Well, and the other part of this, and this is all, they're all connected in Edmonton. If you're, maybe, let's say Connor McDavid signs an 8-year deal. Mm-hmm. If you're Evan Bouchard, I think that does change the calculus a little bit of like, hey, Connor has signed up for 8 years here. I'm not signing up to be an Oiler. I'm signing up to play on PP1 with Connor McDavid for 8 years. I think that changes the price. But if that deal isn't done yet and you're Evan Bouchard, you're going, hold on a second. I'm signing up for all that. Okay, so I'm going to give you this is my hypothetical trade proposal that I've cooked up here. We love a little interprovincial, interrivalry trade. Uh-huh. The Flames have to trade Rasmus Anderson. He seems good as gone. He's way too valuable a player. He's right shot D. What if the Oilers were able to kick their cap problem a year down the road and they were able to turn Evan Bouchard's $10 million that he's about to get into Rasmus Anderson's $4.5 million? Now, look, you're fixing the problem for 1 year, and you have to then figure out a contract extension, but that's next year's problem.
When
the cap's going up, and honestly, if this is any glimpse into the Leafs, how many times it's like, we'll kick that can down the problem, we'll try to figure it out next year. It wouldn't be straight up. Obviously, if you're giving up Bouchard for just 1 year of control on Anderson, you're getting more beyond that, I think, if you're the Oilers there, and then you're able to either get assets, players you like, or you're able to get draft capital, and then you can turn that into NHL players you like. The Oilers are in the cycle that the Leafs have been this whole time because they're trying to win, mm-hmm. where they want to go trade for players at the deadline. And guess what? They don't have a first round pick this year, and they don't have a first round pick next year to be able to do that. So do I think it's going to happen? God, no. If the Calgary Flames couldn't make a trade for Chris Tanev with the Leafs because that offends their sensibilities, I highly doubt they would want to give, you know, what very well could be the finishing piece for the Edmonton Oilers of all this. But I think it really would be a great trade for both teams. If you're the Flames, you got this great young piece to build around with the younger core. It's more on your timeline, but he's actually showing you something. You don't have the cap problem, so you can't afford to pay him. I think it's something both teams would be almost like foolish not to consider. Does it happen? Almost certainly not. But I think it's a really smart deal for both teams.
I don't disagree. There's many problems. The main problem I think about is the order of operations that you mentioned. Evan Bouchard's waiting to see Connor McDavid and his extension.
Right.
I think Connor McDavid is waiting to see what Evan Bouchard's extension looks like.
Well, okay. This is the ultimate, like, he does not want to be asked this question in public.
Yeah.
What makes the Oilers a better team next year? Rasmus Anderson or Evan Bouchard? And is it about next year? Is it about 5 years? And Rasmus Anderson is not, he's 28 years old. Like, he'll be 29 when his extension that he needs to sign, because you're not going to do this just for the rental of Anderson. Obviously, you're finding some deal. And again, if you're Rasmus Anderson, you've been in Alberta the whole time. Yeah. You've seen what it's like to be on the bad side of the rivalry. Why not go join the good one? Could you not see him foregoing free agency to sign a contract there? I absolutely could.
You don't think Evan Bouchard's a Connor McDavid creation, though, right?
I don't think he's a Connor McDavid creation. I think he's a tremendously skilled player. But I think that if he didn't play with Connor McDavid, all of the stuff we talk about from Game 7 would rear its ugly head a lot more often, and you wouldn't be talking about him racking. He would still be a great power play quarterback. But I don't think it is offensive to Evan Bouchard or Leon Draisaitl or Ryan Nugent-Hopkins or anybody else out there to say, you're all getting a McDavid bump. Everybody there is. Creation? Absolutely not. Completely unfair to say. This is not a Joe Thornton, Jonathan Chychrun situation. But this is a guy in Bouchard who has come up in the most perfect incubator you could possibly exist in for the style of play that he has. So I think they're always fair questions to ask. He will rack up points wherever he goes. It's just about, you know, the defenseman stuff. And as you know, it's okay to not have that for the first like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
But once you make 10 sheets a year, that's kind of all we care about, and we will poo-poo the points.
In theory, is the production you get from Rasmus Anderson like worth the $5.5 million? Like, is he closer to Evan Bouchard than $5.5 million in cap space?
I think he absolutely is when you focus on the defensive part of the game. Like the Oilers, I know we're all going to like point to goalies or whatever and, you know, ask them to score a goal in a game 7 or something along those lines. But I look at it and I think that what you get from the defensive side of things from Anderson absolutely makes up the gap. You know, if this wasn't the Oilers with Connor McDavid, I would never suggest this trade. But because it's the Oilers and Connor McDavid, and the next 2 or 3 years are more important than the next 8 as a whole, I absolutely think they should consider this. And it's not just a straight up, like, you're getting other things.
It's the other things that are important here. And it's also what you do with the $5.5 million of cap space. If that's the difference between the assets that you can acquire to go get Jeremy Swayman in the year before his no move clause kicks in.
Well, I don't think it would work that way because, I mean, like, they're trying to get Evan Bouchard for Jeremy Swayman. So I don't, but it's like, hey, do that too. Like, I think they absolutely have to be looking at considering Bouchard trades here. And if the ARB case was different and you could just bridge him, I wouldn't be saying that. But if you're already boxed into paying this guy $10 million a year, it doesn't mean you have to throw him overboard. He's a great player and teams would be lucky to have him. But if you're the Oilers with plenty of other questions and plenty of other guys that are getting paid in that way, including a guy on the blue line who's already making 925 in Nurse, I think you absolutely have to at least consider it. And you're not going to, if you're the Oilers, you're never going to have a chip this valuable to trade again. And maybe they'd say, we don't have one now. We don't want to trade Evan Bouchard. Okay, that's fine. But you need to understand that you can get the first round steal of all time. It's not going to look like that in all certainty. So I think they have to absolutely consider this.
And I know he never puts his finger on the scale, despite his former agent being the president and his former junior coach being the head coach.
That's right.
I bet you Connor McDavid also has an opinion on this.
Yeah, and I genuinely wonder what it is. I think if you're just trading Evan Bouchard for futures, then he has an opinion. If you're trading him for Rasmus Anderson, I think it's a very, very different thing.
All right, a couple more things I want to get to before we take a break. Trevor Zegras has finally been moved. Like, this has been a rumored...
Happiest day of Pat Verbeek's life, apparently.
Yeah, this has been rumored for a while now. And yes, finally, the Ducks have cut bait, sending him to, of all places, Philadelphia for Ryan Poehling and the 45th overall pick, along with the fourth round pick next year. Brent, I know Trevor Zegras is okay, maybe maligned because of the injury stuff the last couple of years. He's formerly like a good player, right?
Honestly,
at least offensively.
Honestly, just maligned because he just like loves the Michigan just a hair too much. That's honestly the biggest thing. It's like he had the misfortune of doing the Michigan, mm-hmm. being slight and playing for the Ducks. It's like that holy trinity right there. It's just like paints
and being
him as
brash too, especially like World Juniors against Canada. Yeah. Like this is a fellow who's not afraid to put himself on Main Street.
Yes, there's absolutely an element of that as well.
The Flyers, they're in this small group of teams in North American pro sports that I feel like have an identity.
Yes. Like throughout generations, it's not
right,
a like
Broad
right
Street
now
bullies,
thing. Yes.
And I know they're transitioning, like John Tortorella, wave goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
Michkov is the future face of the franchise.
Is that the truth?
But isn't it a shame that they're losing that? Like, who are the teams that you think of in pro sports? Like, I think of the Steelers.
Yes.
You got to have a good defense if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers. And since Ben Roethlisberger, you also have to have no quarterback.
That's true.
Same with
you have to win 8 games as well. Absolute bare minimum.
Same with the Bears. The Bears got to have a good defense.
Oh,
right?
I was going to say they can't play offense like the other way. It's like the Bears are not actually allowed to score any points. That's their identity.
Yeah, I feel like the Pistons. Yeah,
you need like a hard scrabble kind of team.
Sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's because it was baked in on multiple championship teams. Like it's like the Bad Boy Pistons and then the Ben Wallace, Chauncey Billups Pistons.
But I also do this with non-championship level teams.
Yep.
Like the Rays are always just going to develop these pitchers out
absolutely.
Of nowhere, right?
Yep. Pixie dust and magic.
How sad is it that we're moving away? Like the Flyers are leaning totally into the skill quotient so much so that they couldn't fathom another season with John Tortorella.
Yeah, they couldn't. Although, again, I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. Didn't he light himself on fire here in Toronto? There was some comment he had that was basically like, would anyone like to fire me? Please put me out of my misery here. Kind of felt that way. Even last year, right? Like, it's like they make or 2 years ago, I guess it was now, they make the Cutter Gauthier trade, and it's not about Cutter Gauthier, but it's about the type of player they identify there. It's a slick, puck-moving defenseman in Jamie Drysdale, who, you know, career just hasn't taken off the way I think a lot of people thought it would have. Yeah, you're absolutely losing this. And, you know, like Danny Briere, it's not that he was some wallflower in his playing career, but it's like, he's so tiny. It's not exactly like it's like Keith Jones up there, mean face, calling the shots, and I know he's involved as well. But, yeah, there is something about it. It feels like it's going away. And again, it's like even recent-ish Flyers teams, like, you know, you remember Hartnell on those Flyers teams, and they always just had that about them. I mean, I'm going to be sick mentioning this. Are your best friend in the world, Jeremy Roenick, breaking Leafs hearts on Flyers teams. So, yeah, it is sad to see it happen because Trevor Zegras is the least Flyer.
No.
Like, he's the least Flyer. Like, you could say this. You could say this sentence, like, X player is the least X team of all time. And I think Trevor Zegras to Philadelphia Flyers might be the best case scenario of that example.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure we can find something else, but.
You know what it is?
What?
It's like Sam Bennett is the least Toronto Maple Leaf of all time.
Oh, because he takes hometown discounts and just loves to perform in the playoffs, but
correct.
Not in the regular season.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Anyways, okay. Let's do Kevin Durant here before we take the break. So Kevin Durant, he got his wish.
Well, hold on. Quickly on Zegras. Like, do you think this is going to work, or do you think this is just like – because to me, it's like I have always looked at him as just like unserious player, and he has had chances to be the guy. It's never really worked there. I think this is a, like, fine move for the Flyers to make, but I ultimately think this is going to be an uber, uber frustrating season for them and Zegras and everything there.
Yeah, I think you're in – your old age, have grown to hate the style of play that Trevor Zegras plays. And I understand
it
because
I don't begrudge it.
It's an easy thing to do considering the production the last 2 years, considering the performance of the Anaheim Ducks. But that's largely been due to injury. If he's a 60-point player again, like, that helps you.
Yes, that does help you.
Especially if he's playing up the middle, which I guess there's some question about in Philadelphia.
Yeah, very much a question. Last one, him and Drysdale reunited. There was a clip going around from Ryan Getzlaff's last season in Anaheim. And it is like Zegras and Drysdale, like, I don't know what they're doing, like cup checking each other or just being, I don't know, being 20 years old, basically, is the answer to this. And Ryan Getzlaff looked like, I did it. I officially stayed too long. So that will always be my lasting memory of Zegras. And now he's reunited with the guy that co-drove Ryan Getzlaff into retirement.
Yeah. The least Philadelphia Flyer of all time. All right. Kevin Durant got his wish. There were three teams he wanted to go to. It was the Rockets. It was the Spurs. And who was the third team? It definitely was not the Minnesota Timberwolves.
No, I'm blanking on who it was as well.
Anyways, he's under contract. He only has one more year on his deal. And the Suns were well within their rights to send him wherever they wanted. But apparently, according to Brian Windhorst, they didn't do that. That Kevin Durant was driving this whole trade market this offseason.
So last summer, the Rockets made it a very interesting trade, a trade we'd never seen before. They traded some of the picks that they owned from the Nets back to Brooklyn, which cleared the way for them to tank, which they did this year. They got the eighth pick. And they got picks that the Suns. They got two picks and a swap. And as soon as that happened, people said, I think they're trying to get Kevin Durant. And all year long, the Rockets said, not really. We're not, you know, we love Kevin Durant, but he's in his mid-30s. We got this team in the 20s. We're not really going for him. I believed Rafael Stone when he said this. By the way, he said this publicly. He said it privately, too. He said it publicly because I believe that he wanted to have his young team grow. Mm-hmm. But something happened the last few weeks. One, you're dead on. Ime Udoka, he wanted him. He went to ownership and said, and front office and said, can we get Kevin Durant and get him? The other thing was they couldn't say no to the price. The price was just so low, they just couldn't say no. So the Rockets had this happen because Kevin Durant controlled this process. Last winter, the Warriors were ready to trade for him. And he said, I don't want to go there. And they backed off. Last week, the Timberwolves were on the verge of trading for him.
I don't want to go there.
And Ant Edwards could have tried to talk him into it. He did not. Said, this is not my place. KD, you do what you do. And so the price came down. The Rockets moved in. Mm. That's how you elevate yourself as a team. Mm-hmm. You buy low, and you have a great opportunity.
It's also how you murder your franchise or the previous franchise you were on in the Phoenix Suns. A place, again, I'm old enough to remember when Kevin Durant orchestrated a trade to Phoenix, right?
What honestly, in all of pro sports, there's no more. What has happened there in Phoenix? They're in the NBA Finals, three seasons ago? Mm-hmm. And it is just a disaster wasteland despite having all the guys that want to be there. It is nuts, nuts, nuts.
Yeah, the Heat, were the third team he was interested in being traded to. Again, had no actual lever to pull to orchestrate a trade to one place or another. It was not, I mean, he is a pending free agent, so he could have threatened to not sign an extension wherever he went, sure. I suppose.
Yep.
But apparently the Phoenix Suns were acquiescing to his every desire in sending him to one of those three places. And as a result, yeah, the Rockets had no choice but to accept this deal because it is cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cents on the dollar because Kevin Durant said, I'm only going to these three places. Don't send me anywhere else.
Honestly, every time, and I don't know that I was like feeling these pangs at all, but anytime I think about like, is Kevin Durant a sympathetic figure? He reminds me, absolutely not. Don't you dare be sympathetic towards me for one second. I see something like this and it's just, yeah, he tanked his value. He orchestrated exactly where he wants to go. And it'd be one, I would have an appetite for this if it was like, hey man, it just hasn't gone Kevin Durant's way. And he was like, this is the second team he's on and it hasn't worked out. How many times do you get to be a nomad and force a team to blow everything up only for it to blow up in their face? And then you go, God, you guys are idiots. Get me out of here. I have absolutely no time for it. No time for it at all. But I mean, yeah, if you're the Rockets, you absolutely should be trying to do it. I still think that way because I ultimately look at the Rockets. They weren't going to win a title with this. I look at where the Raptors were in that Lowry DeRozan. And it's like, yes, is this fun? Sure. But ultimately, let's push some chips in and see if you can go win a title. And if you can, great. And if not, you probably should have blown it up anyway. So it makes all the sense in the world. I do love that Udoka just wanted him. There's something about that guy. It goes back to the clip of him wolfing at LeBron. like a few years ago. He's like, yeah, I am talking smack to you. He didn't even say smack. He used a cuss word. And it's like, yeah, he's not afraid. He does not care. He is the leader of that team. And I think there's something about having a coach with true kind of personality, gumption, and control in an org. You know, part of what made it work so long in Miami was the affinity that those guys eventually developed for Spoelstra. Mm-hmm. But it was Pat Riley letting it be known, like, hey, I'm in charge here. Like, you guys think you're in charge, and that's cute, LeBron. I'm in charge. And I don't know that Aduka has the sway that Pat Riley does right now, but I think he's certainly trending in that way. So I think that helps him a ton as well.
It's funny to think of Anthony Edwards being asked to pitch Kevin Durant on this thing and him saying, yeah, no, actually I'll pass because I don't want to have the sideways glare from Kevin Durant in February when he's in Minnesota and I made him come here.
Yeah, I just want to get beat by him in the playoffs next year instead. That'd be the fun way. Quick question for you. You're a TV guy, or at least much more of one than I. They have to play like a sick beat in the middle of Windhorse breaking it down. I never understand this. I'm like, who's watching TV? And it's just like, I need to hear a sick like music bed underneath Brian Windhorse's take here. I don't know. Always irks me.
Because they were playing a highlight. Clips over top.
There you go.
Anyways, okay, when we come back, NHL draft on Friday, we'll talk to Jason Bukala next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Anders, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. So we have a Stanley Cup champion. We had multiple days of celebration for the Florida Panthers. They had their parade. And right into draft time and then right into free agency. No rest until after free agency. Although, like the Mitch Marner of it all, going to throw a wrench into everybody's cottage plans, maybe.
I like the world where the NHL insiders as a community get to the Marner camp and say, We have made a decision as a society. We are not baseball. We do not stand for this. Get your business done. Maybe not July 1, but like July 4 or 5, absolutely. Like by the time America's celebrating, you better have this deal done. I would like a world where the NHL insiders get to the Marner camp on that.
All right, let's talk to one of those insiders. Jason Bukala, Sportsnet Hockey Central analyst, writer for Sportsnet.ca, founder of the Pro Hockey Group, former NHL director of amateur scouting for the Florida Panthers. Jason, thanks for doing this. Where are you headed? I thought this was a decentralized draft, but you're traveling to the nebulous draft that doesn't have a place?
Yeah, the bags are packed. I'm about to hit the road here for Los Angeles today and looking forward to getting out there. It's definitely going to be different, fellas. I'm going to miss for at least this year and hopefully only one year that the interaction, you know, the draft floor interaction and all the convention-like atmosphere that the NHL draft traditionally has brought to the table in the past. And then the kind of the pageantry on the floor with the runners, like the little people that get up there with the jersey on, giving off the hats and stuff like that. But anyways, I digress. Heading there today and excited to. It'll be the only time that someone with a face for radio gets on the stage at the Peacock Theater, which is home to the Oscars. So I'll take advantage of my one-time opportunity.
No, that's awesome, man. And yeah, no doubt we'll be following your coverage of the draft. But yeah, this decentralized thing, who thought it was a good idea? And like, do they immediately regret the decision? It does feel like this is going to be a one-off thing and everybody's going to go back to the way it used to be, right?
Yeah, I think that's a done deal somewhere in the back corners of the NHL offices right now. You know, Gary Bettman did not want this to happen this way. The competition committee or the general managers at a meeting at one of their winter meetings they voted that this is how they wanted to have the draft going forward. And the thought behind it was that there wasn't enough time to get yourself ready for free agency, and you had to travel your scouts in and out of different locations and the costs associated with that. But now, fast forward to today, the general managers realized, you know what, like it's not costing us any less to do it this way. And honestly, if we're not kind of already got our foot in the deep end a little bit here for a free agency, we're probably spinning our tires anyway. So They realized already that it was a bad decision, I believe, in the heart of hearts, and it's going to go back to the way it was, hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah, honestly, a little bit of a crude life analogy here. It almost feels like the NHL owners were like, do we need to buy like the plush toilet paper? Let's try some one-ply, and they're trying it once, and they're like, you know what? Back to the plush stuff for me. I don't need to slum it with regarding this. Yeah, it does feel like it was a cost-cutting measure. And like you said, maybe they're not even saving as much as they thought. Just, you know, you follow the draft every year. You cover it with the prospect stuff as well. But, of course, you cover the league by and large. Can you – I don't want to overstate it and say this is the busiest it's ever been heading into. But, man, it just seems like there is a ton of scuttlebutt. I mean, we have the Zegras trade yesterday. It feels like whether it's free agency news that's trickling out or, you know, Marner speculation, it just seems like it's an incredibly kind of busy time heading into the draft, maybe more so than normal.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's lots going on. There's lots going on right at the top of the table with the draft class. I think that this draft, I think Matthew Schaefer, he is the consensus number one. I don't see the Islanders not taking Matthew Schaefer number one. But right after that, guys, it could go off the rails for a lot of teams in their list, depending on who's number two. Like I have Caleb Desnoyer from Moncton number two. You know, and I would probably be in the minority for that. Some prognosticators, if you will, have him as low as, you know, 7 or 8, which is crazy. But my point is that there's going to be a lot of movement at the top. Utah's a team to keep a really close eye on, in my opinion. It's found money for them to jump up in the draft, the fourth slot for this year. They have an enormous amount of depth already in all positions, and they got a ton of draft capital. So, to your point, the fourth overall pick can be in play for a variety of reasons, a draft or draft trade to improve the current roster, you know, by acquiring an NHL roster player, and he'd have to be a top 4D or a top 6-forward, I would suggest. That they're okay in net, although they need a backup. There's going to be a lot going on like that. Teams that have cash, teams that want to get better now, even Chicago. And then you get into the free agency discussions. There's a curious strategy here that I'm want to watch unfold, and that is that next year's free agent class is considerably deeper than this year's. So how much money, how much spending do you want to do at this year, you know, Christmas time this year, if you will, when you want to have enough left in your stocking for next year when it really gets heavy for the free agency. So, yeah, lots and lots going on. And the depth of the draft is just okay. So as you get into the middle of the draft, it's going to be more difficult to make trades back or up in the draft just because the value of the player is different this year.
So we know the Leafs obviously don't have a first-round pick. They have a number of picks, though, including second-rounder. This is also the first draft for Mark Leach. What do you know about his philosophy, and does it inform what you think the Leafs will do come this weekend?
First of all, I've known Mark forever, probably 18 years or so. In terms of his philosophy, we would go head to head just by circumstance for many years. Our table was beside the Dallas table on the floor. And you know, I'll give you one little story. In Chicago, we had, I believe it was the 41st pick. It was either the 40th or the 41st pick. And Dallas was picked right in front of us. And we had Jason Robertson on our list as our next player. And we were just sitting there waiting and waiting. And lucky for Dallas, they took Jason Robertson one pick ahead of us. And I would imagine Florida today, if they would have had Jason Robertson on the roster on top of everything else, it would have been even more of a juggernaut. Anyways, I digress. They value, Mark values, and Joe McDaniela valued a lot of the same things we did. And that was that, especially when you get into the second round and beyond, they do put an emphasis on size if they can get it, but it's not the biggest priority. But in a perfect world, they do like to have some size, but it's going to be character and hockey sense, guys. It's going to be about guys who can perform on their hardest day at a high level. It's not going to be so much of a reach, hoping that a smaller skill guy, for example, might be able to maximize. I think Mark's going to go after people that are going to fit a certain type, a player type, as a team-building mechanism. And he'll do a heck of a good job. He's a fantastic human being, works really hard, been doing it forever. And I know that they've changed their ways this year, too. It's not so much of an analytics type of it's a different brand of drafting strategy, I will just say that. And I'm curious to see how the Leafs, you know, kind of perform here with their limited draft capital.
Yeah, very limited. And like you said, I mean, that's maybe been a direction they've kind of been trending since Treliving took over, right? Like, I think it is pretty safe to say there are a lot of differences between the Dubas regime and the Brad Treliving one. But Ben Danford didn't exactly scream Cal Dubas draft pick to me. So, yeah, things have certainly trended in a slightly different direction. I mean, you've already mentioned a couple of these teams, but I kind of want to go back to both of them. The center market, there just are none available. If John Tavares and the Leafs are able to get a contract done, good luck if you were looking for a free agent center out there. I know the Islanders want to turn this around relatively quickly, but I mean, you have the first overall pick. You're going to obviously have a slightly different timeline, and you know, first overall picks can make a difference pretty quickly. But I look at a guy like Bo Horvat in his 30s, $8 million, and yes, there's a lot of term, but it's term that should, you know, for at least the next 3, 4, maybe 5 years of that deal be totally, you know, fine with regards to a rising cap and just making $8 million. I know they've said they don't want to move the player, but do you think there's a world as we get closer to free agency and, I don't know, maybe a Tavares deal gets done that kind of forces, not the Islanders' hand, but forces teams to come stepping up their offers and maybe somebody have a bit of a godfather offer for Bo Horvat?
Well, yeah, you know, it's, first of all, if I'm the Islanders, I'm not trading Bo Horvat. I'm not considering making that move. For the simple reason that he's a glue guy, and he's coming off a very solid season. He's low maintenance. He's a solid pro. He's similar in a lot of ways in terms of the way he goes about his business to what the way John Tavares went about his business on the island years ago. Like, he's not going to ruffle any feathers. He's going to just show up and be a pro. I understand that they want to get the playoffs sooner than later, and I guess that's the one caveat. That's the reason you keep them. But on the flip side of that, from a hockey ops perspective, my contradiction would be exactly what you're suggesting, and that is that, you know, the future drafts or the next year's for sure, it looks really, really good, and you could really expedite your future by making a deal to acquire more depth assets, draft capital, or even prospects right now from a team like Utah to expedite things. So, you know, that's a very affordable number. Bo Horvat's contract is not going to age poorly. He's going to be in good shape. He's going to be a healthy competitor for the next 4 or 5 years, like you said. And that number is going to look fantastic. Now, let's go back to Tavares. Like John Tavares, if he decided he wanted to leave Toronto, he could cash in much more money on a deal than he could get from the Leafs now, and let the Leafs get creative, i.e. the Tanev deal, give him lots of term with less cap hit. That's going to be curious to see how that rolls out. The Leafs better get him done at this point in time, because they're still in the window and they need that slot, that center ice slot next year, at least for another year or two. And I think he'll start to age to become a winger after that, but they need him to be at least a 60-40 centerman for the next year and a half. Yeah. So get it done.
Yeah, well, I mean, what do you make of the fact that it's not? And not only is it not done, there are reports that there's like frustration on both sides, because it does feel like... Yeah, everybody knows if John Tavares wants to maximize his earning potential, go to free agency, and you can make $7 million maybe in free agency, and the Leafs are probably unwilling to give you that. But the understanding, I thought, from both parties was he's going to take less to be a Leaf, and now we've got these reports of frustration. What is your take on this?
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it at all, to be perfectly honest. I think that this should have been... These conversations should have been taking place from the trade deadline on. There should have been more of an understanding as you track towards June. And I think that we all, to a man, would have agreed that Mitch Marner, unless the Leafs went to the Stanley Cup final, was likely gone. So you knew the type of dollars you're going to have in the bank to spend on your key players. What it might also tell me, though, guys, is that I don't know what's going on with Matthew Nyes. I don't know where that contract's going. But, you know, Brad Treliving, he's got to get Matthew. In my mind, right from the beginning, it's like, we got to get Matthew Nyes done first. Like, it's got to get done, because I cannot do it in reverse order, i.e. the Edmonton Oilers last year, go spend my money or spend most of my money and then be standing there with my pants down when an offer sheet comes my way that I can't afford to counter. So I think that the Tavares thing might have as much to do with whatever's going on with Matthew Nyes as it does with himself, the John Tavares scenario. So, but you know, if he's outpriced, let's say he's asking for seven, the way you just suggested, then, I mean, that puts Brad Treliving right in the corner because he's probably looking at a deal that's that Matthew Nye is that big deal, not a bridge deal, a bigger deal that's going to spend all the dollars. It's a tough spot to be in. So, yeah, it's curious it's got this far. I don't like that it has got this far. I think that if you really want to be here, get it done at a number that's reasonable so that you know we can go to our other younger restricted free agent, get him done, and make the team better with whatever's left over.
Yeah, it's just odd because at the exit meetings, like Tavares came out, it felt like he was about to announce his own contract extension. Then he's like, yeah, everybody wants me back. I want to be back. This is great. And here we are. Okay, I have to ask you about this Evan Bouchard situation. You know, Friedman was talking about the numbers case he has, even like a bridge deal, even arbitration. He's looking at close to, if not $10 million a season. What do the Oilers do here? I mean, you maybe can't afford to let Evan Bouchard walk, obviously for nothing. That wouldn't have happened. But I also don't know that you can afford to do a bridge deal. It's one thing if you get him for the 8 years and you're like, all right, here we go. We are pot committed. There's no world where you could do a bridge deal that is locking this guy up at $10 million. What do the Oilers do with Bouchard here? Because obviously they got to do some careful stepping regarding Connor McDavid.
Yeah, Connor McDavid, and they need a goalie. Don't they, guys? Like they need a goaltender who can prove. So I think back to my Florida days, and this is very, very similar, except the timeline was different. So what we did back in the day was we made the decision to extend Aaron Ekblad on a significant deal. I think it was 7.25 at the time.
Felt like an overpay. I'm going to be honest, Books.
It did, absolutely, until it wasn't. And yep. So that's the situation that Edmonton finds themselves in too. And our situation was such that we had cost certainty on like Barkov and Huberdeau and, you know, Weegar, et cetera. And it allowed us to go out and sign Bobrovsky at $10 million a year. And everybody thought that was horrendous until, again, it wasn't. Now the Edmonton Oilers find themselves in a situation where, geez, they got McDavid a year away. They're going to possibly be stuck with this bridge deal, and they need a goaltender. It's brutal. What a terrible situation to be in, because you look at that team and you just have to ask yourself, is he more valuable than Darnell Nurse to the end result of our day? Like at the end of the day, is he more valuable to us than Nurse? And the answer is yes. I hate Bouchard's defending 50% of the time. I really do. Between games 1 and 82, and sometimes in the playoffs, he's so laissez-faire that it drives me nuts. But his pedigree and what he does pays him to a certain pay slot. That's the reality. That's the reality they're dealing with, and it is tough. If they bridge him at that, he's gonzo next time. He's going to be going somewhere else. If they go long term, yeah, exactly. If they go long term, then they're going to have cost certainty. But, you know, what's that look like in relation to what they do next with McDavid, et cetera, et cetera? Edmonton's in a tough spot. They don't have a lot of draft capital. They don't have a lot of prospects coming, and they've got the best player in the world sitting there waiting to cash in. And, oh, yeah, by the way, if we're not in the Stanley Cup contending window, I don't know if I really want to be here anyways.
Okay, I have to throw my hypothetical at you. Not going to happen because I couldn't imagine these two teams ever making a trade. Rasmus Anderson only makes $4.5 million. He's under contract for next season. Is there any world where, like, the timeline for Bouchard makes more sense for the Flames? The Rasmus Anderson, that would help the Oilers. Like, he's not giving you the production, but he is a more capable defender. You then could kick your cap, you know, problem a year down the road. Is there like any world where it's Rasmus Anderson plus for Evan Bouchard? Like, what do you make of my crazy hypothetical here?
Yeah, no, I think it's something you throw up on the whiteboard in the war room, if you will, and you take a look at it. But I just don't see. I think Calgary takes a look at what they've got going on, and they say to themselves, our trajectory here and the amount of cap space that we have to work with, we can wait out stuff like this. And so I don't know that Bouchard fits exactly what they want to have Fair. In the future necessarily with how their philosophy is to build their team. That's the other thing. Like Evan Bouchard, as good as he is and as what he does offensively, he's still not a cup of coffee for everybody. Like he's not for everybody, that guy. So it all comes down to how you want to build your team. And that would be fascinating. It'd be like a Montreal Canadian Toronto Maple Leaf trade, right? Like I'd be fascinated from a distance to watch that happen. I don't think it will, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah. And to throw a wrench into matters, you got to do what's best for your team, but also what Connor McDavid wants you to do, right? Like, if Connor McDavid wants Evan Bouchard, don't you kind of just have to decide him to the extension no matter what the cost?
Well, I don't know if they, I don't know if he looks at it that way, to be honest with you. I don't know. I don't know that that Connor McDavid and some of these guys in a on a quiet day say to themselves, like, if you look at Florida this year, they didn't need a Brandon Montour, for example, from the year before. They didn't need that, right? Mm-hmm. They built it out a different way. And I think the Oilers have to change the way that they've built out their roster, because they've run headlong into a juggernaut 2 years in a row. They see it live for these extended series of how to make it happen in playoffs. And by the way, you don't have to have that on the back end. I think they need to invest more in finding a goaltender than they do in big, big money on the defense side. If they could trade Darnell Nurse in a perfect world, it makes it feel more comfortable on the horizon. That would be my approach there, and see how it plays out. But yeah, I think he just got to change it. The DNA words, or DNA is getting thrown around a lot, isn't it, this spring? And I think they got to make some DNA changes.
Yep. Probably less DNA changes than the Leafs, but yeah, probably still some to come. Should be an exciting couple of weeks here, Jason. Enjoy California. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, before I go out the door here, I want to throw you guys out a name that's to keep an eye on maybe for the Leafs, all right? Matthew Gard from the Red Deer Rebels, 6'5", 192-pound centerman. Fraser Minton light on the offensive side, but up and down the ice, kind of hard out. Wins faceoffs, kills penalties, plays heavy hard. So keep an eye on that name, Matthew Gard.
All right, we'll keep our ears to the ground on that bad boy. All right, Jason, appreciate it.
All right, boys, have a good day. Take care.
You too, Jason Bukala, Sportsnet's own Hockey Central analyst, writer for Sportsnet.ca, founder of Pro Hockey Group, former NHL director of amateur scouting with the Florida Panthers, Matthew Gard, okay?
Tall and from Red Deer. I'm not diminishing the work Bukala does, but, like, I feel like I could have told you Brad Treliving likes that guy.
Okay, yeah, you could handle that, and I could handle the other thing that Brad Treliving is going to do, which is give all the money to the Florida Panthers.
Have you seen the Stanley Cup in your life before?
Yeah.
Here's millions of dollars.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. When we come back, we'll talk to Anthony Petrielli, writer of Leafs Notebook on Maple Leafs Hot Stove. Next, as the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.